Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Jim Haley for Appellant Zipong Liu. Your Honors, Mr. Liu's argument that brings him here this morning is fairly simple, and I'm sure the Court's read the briefs. And essentially, as the Court must appreciate, Mr. Liu's prior trial counsel, as identified by lower court, Superior Court, failed him in that he procured Mr. Liu's dismissal of his prior appeal of his the Superior Court's denial of post-conviction relief back in the early 1990s, and by promising Mr. Liu that he would file a new trial motion for him in Superior Court. That never materialized. For a number of years, Mr. Liu, a Chinese immigrant, did his own pro se new trial motion in Superior Court when his attorney failed to do that for him. And there was a long period of languishing, frankly, in Superior Court. He renewed his post-conviction motion in Superior Court following this court's relief to a co-defendant of his named Vicky Chow, in which her felony murder convictions were reduced some years ago. And
well, getting to the issue.
Yes, Your Honor.
Or trying to, anyway. Is it correct that the Superior Court found that by not filing the appeal, trial counsel did, his performance fell below the standard articulated in the first part of Strickland?
Yes, Your Honor.
But that there was no prejudice that resulted, and therefore counsel, that there was no ineffective assistance for constitutional purposes.
This is what the Superior Court found, Your Honor, yes, most recently.
Is it correct, then, that the only issue before us is whether there was prejudice?
Yes, Your Honor, essentially, I would agree with that.
Why don't we focus on that?
Yes, Your Honor. And on that question of prejudice to Mr. Liu from his prior counsel's failure to preserve his appeal right from the Superior Court's prior denial of his post-conviction relief motion, now, I would submit that this court in its decisions has recognized, at least with regard to direct appeals from a conviction, that a loss of appeal right is inherently prejudicial.
Well, as a practical matter, to demonstrate, well, first of all, you agree that the burden is on the defendant to demonstrate prejudice.
Yes, Your Honor.
So as a practical matter, didn't you have to argue the appeal before the trial court in the first instance? And as a practical matter, aren't you arguing the appeal, the merits of the appeal to us to support your prejudice prong?
Yes, Your Honor. I'll acknowledge that as far as the merits go, underlying merits of Mr. Liu's original post-conviction application that was denied, I am unable to point to a particular error that has some probability of success on appeal that was made by the Superior Court back at his first application in the mid-1990s. Your Honor, I would point out to the court that at least to Mr. Liu's perspective, he has been disserved by his prior attorney, and he had an appeal he was pursuing on his own. And so,
and as I understood the argument in your brief, that you have an absolute right to a direct appeal, he perfected a timely direct appeal, and he gave up that right on the condition that a new trial motion would be filed, and that wasn't done.
Right.
So his prejudice is he lost his absolute right to a direct appeal.
And through an attorney, Your Honor, it should be noted that he was alleging was ineffective, that somehow he had a claim against that attorney, had a claim against, came into this court and
I understand.
And appeared for him.
And then going back to what would or would not have been the merits of the direct appeal, and the Superior Court simply said, I don't think you would have had any merit in your direct appeal, but we don't know what possible issues could have been raised by some other attorney that reviewed the record. The Superior Court did it on its own. Now, you cite the Middlebrook case, and you said historically, our court has said, if you lose your right to a direct appeal, it gets reinstated one of two ways, through a resentencing to restart the clock, or through an order that says you can file a Rule 61 motion raising all the issues that you would have raised in a direct appeal.
Yes.
But here, the Superior Court chose a third option, which was the Superior Court implicitly said it reviewed the entire record.
Yes.
And it found no issues to raise on appeal.
Yes.
So as I understand your argument, it's that the Superior Court should not have done that. The Superior Court should have chose one of the two avenues that this court has recognized in the past.
Yes, Your Honor, that this court institutionally recognizes that there is a better settlement of an adjudication if there's a higher court reviewing the lower court, and a court reviewing itself does not give adequate resolution to the parties before who feel like they've been deserved in that court, and that as an inherent matter, it simply does not measure up to this court appellate review of lower court's decision. And as far as Your Honor pointing out the record more clearly, where perhaps counsel failed to identify meritorious issues below, that Mr. Liu was prejudiced in not having adequate representation over or weren't properly considered by the court below, that entire transcript below, I've not reviewed that, Your Honor, just so the record is clear. So I have not done a full review of that record and argued that prior record to the Superior Court. So to our view, the entire record being reviewed on appeal through counsel is the appropriate way to dispose of the matter.
Wait, is it accurate to say, in a hypothetical situation, that if it was absolutely 100% clear that an appeal, if filed, would have been unsuccessful?
Yes, Your Honor.
That under that circumstance, nonetheless, when counsel does not file that appeal or does not move for the new trial, as in this case, that there is a right to post-conviction relief. Is that...
Okay, Your Honor, restate that for me one more time, please.
We've been talking about demonstrating prejudice.
Yes, Your Honor.
Hypothetically, if we brought in five appellate lawyers from the wherever, who reviewed the record and concluded that there was no arguable basis to succeed on appeal.
Yes.
Would there still be a requirement to reverse so that the appeal could be filed? And if so, does that modify Strickland?
Your Honor, I guess the rub is whether the inherent right of appeal, whether that language necessarily means prejudice, perhaps, is what I would argue to it, without a showing of the particular merit of the appeal.
How does this relate to Rule 26, where we provide by our rule that if the defendant wants to take a direct appeal, the attorney must file the direct appeal, even if the attorney thinks it has no merit. And then the attorney can file a motion to withdraw, and the defendant can raise their own points.
Exactly, Your Honor. I would submit that the right of review from the higher court that's guaranteed to the criminal defendants in our system from Superior Court to Supreme Court is something that is inherently prejudicial when it's lost, even if to any rational reviewer of the record no compelling issue appears that would be successful on appeal. And the court provides for even relief for an attorney who in good conscience and good faith can't argue this issue to this court. So,
is it correct that the error that was the subject of the appeal that was taken but then later dismissed It's the same error that would have been the subject of the motion for new trial that was not prosecuted?
It appears so, Your Honor, that the prior attorney did an affidavit to Superior Court.
The answer is yes?
Yes, Your Honor. But
And if I understood the position that you took earlier on in your presentation, you're saying your position is that in this particular case, the failure for the attorney to go forward with the motion for new trial was inherently prejudicial, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And by that, I mean, if that's true, then you don't need to prove anything other than the fact that the attorney's conduct fell below the first standard or the first prong of a Strickland.
That's right, Your Honor.
So is this more of a chronic analysis? There's a structural error?
And what's that, Your Honor? May I ask if could elaborate
more? Where prejudice is presumed because of a structural defect?
Yes, Your Honor. The appellant, Mr. Liu, I would submit, can only be fairly resolved his claims by our judicial system with restoring him the status quo ante the default of his of attorney he had a claim of ineffective assistance of counsel against, induced himself back into Mr. Liu's good graces, and then dismissed the appeal in this court back in the mid-90s and failed to follow the trial motion as he promised back in Superior Court, and that has left Liu without getting a full and fair review of the record on the post-conviction denial by this court, and that's
the
rub of it.
The affidavit the attorney filed, the affidavit still contends that the attorney thought the new trial motion had merit.
He did, in his affidavit, say that, Your Honor, and it's relatively vague, and there's not much I can say about that proposed new trial motion that is in the affidavit. It's a very vague claim.
Is there an analogy from the civil case we decided in McCool and Garrett, where in that particular case, it was a medical malpractice case, the plaintiffs waived their right to a jury trial on the condition that they have a bench trial before a particular judge, and that was agreed. And then, as it turned out, a different judge conducted the bench trial. And this court held that if you gave up your constitutional right predicated on a factual premise that never materialized, it wasn't a valid waiver. So here we have a defendant who waived his right to continue with the direct appeal based on a representation a new trial motion would be filed, and it never materialized.
Exactly, Your Honor. And
well, it never materialized in the sense that it was prosecuted by the attorney.
It was filed pro se, yes, Your Honor, by Mr. Liu himself, a new trial motion, a year later, roughly.
Do we know why there was no action taken on that for 6 years?
No, Your Honor. There was a prior trial judge in the case, and perhaps between judge assignments, it fell through.
And who was that?
Judge Gebling was the original trial judge and judge who handled the post-conviction at its outset, Your Honor.
So it was before him for 6 years, or did it?
I can't say when he retired, Your Honor, or when he left the bench exactly.
So it might have been under advisement for some time. He left the bench and it wasn't reassigned.
Correct, Your Honor.
So it just languished.
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, help me understand the record. The new trial motion that ultimately your client filed pro se.
Yes.
Was counsel appointed to represent him on that?
No, Your Honor.
But it was sent to his original counsel, and his original counsel took no action.
That's right, Your Honor.
And his original counsel never advised the court why no action was being taken?
Not beyond the affidavit that's before us, Your Honor.
And the affidavit says, I thought somebody else would be appointed since he was complaining about me.
Yes, Your Honor.
So the motion for a new trial has never been addressed?
No, I would say most recently the Superior Court in its 2012 decision got into the merits of that, Your Honor. If you read the end of that decision that we're appealing from, the court below addresses Mr. Liu's claims that were pro se.
Okay. So, and he had counsel for that?
Your Honor, I was his counsel in Superior Court. But we did not brief the new trial motion. It appeared to me that the court below sort of took it upon itself to wrap that new trial motion into its disposition of the Rule 61 motion. It sort of swept that all up together. So that was not particularly argued by counsel.
Are you claiming any error as to that aspect of the denial of the
motion? I did not claim it in briefs, Your Honor. So it's not formally argued, but it was the court's sweeping resolution of both the new trial motion and the post-conviction Rule 61 motion was a surprise.
Has your client received the benefit of whatever arrangement he was looking for? A motion for a new trial was addressed while he was represented by counsel by the Superior Court?
Yes, Your Honor. The court's decision does address the new trial motion, the merits raised by Mr. Liu in that motion.
But was it briefed and argued by you?
No, Your Honor.
So you were briefing and arguing a separate issue, which was decided by the Superior Court, and along the way, even though it hadn't been briefed and argued, the Superior Court decided the new trial motion.
It did. That's how I read the decision, Your Honor.
Well, would a remand for you to brief and argue the motion for new trial make your client whole?
No, I can't say that, Your Honor, but...
Before a new judge?
Whether the judge would change or not would not be too critical to him, I would submit, but as far as loss of appellate review of what happened back in the mid-90s, I cannot say that he would be satisfied that he's gotten relief on that, Your Honor. But
he gave up his right to appellate review. The only issue was a motion for new trial, presumably prosecuted competently by counsel.
It was, Your Honor, but the other rub, I guess, about dismissing the appeal at the outset was that it was done through an attorney who he had a claim of ineffective assistance against to begin with. So whether he
there's no issue about the validity of the waiver, at least at the time it was made. So how is it?
It was made knowingly, Your Honor.
How is it that we're sweeping into this proceeding the merits of the appeal when all of the argument focuses on the motion for new trial, which was the quid pro quo for giving up the right to appeal? I mean, there's got to be some boundaries to this case, and I'm not sure what they are. They seem to be moving.
And, Your Honor, the difficulty with the new trial motion, again, is that at the stage that the court considered it below, it was Mr. Liu's pro se new trial motion, not benefited by counsel.
Okay, there was a new trial motion that was prosecuted, but it was prosecuted pro se.
It was, Your Honor.
It was decided by the court, but not with the benefit of briefs and oral arguments submitted by counsel.
True.
So to get back to Justice Ridgely's question, if relief could be granted in a way that would assure your client the right to have that issue litigated by counsel representing him, would that not make him whole?
Yes, Your Honor, but with the caveat that if there are procedural bars to some meritorious consideration of the new trial motion I'm not aware of, that would be the only question.
We're just asking if that would be sufficient.
A meritorious consideration of the new trial motion would be an adequate point for Mr. Liu, yes, Your Honor.
You only have 45 seconds left of the time you reserve.
I'll reserve that time, Your Honor. Thank you, Your Honors.
Good morning again.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Karen Sullivan on behalf of the State. I'd like to start by correcting a misunderstanding. Mr. Liu had a direct appeal. This court decided his direct appeal in 1993. The appeal that was at issue that Mr. Liu decided to voluntarily dismiss upon the advice of counsel was the appeal from his first pro se post-conviction motion.
Yeah, we understand that. We misspoke, but we understand the procedural posture. Thank you.
And a second item that I'd like to try to correct is that the Superior Court decided that the decision of counsel to voluntarily dismiss the appeal was not deficient performance. The Superior Court said there was no objective standard violated when counsel recommended voluntary dismissal of the Rule 61 appeal.
Right. So what's at issue is not the voluntary dismissal of the appeal, but the failure to obtain the quid pro quo for that voluntary dismissal, correct?
Correct.
And as to that, the court did find that performance was subpar.
That is correct, Your Honor.
All right. So do you agree that the issue here is prejudice, resulting prejudice?
Yes, Your Honor.
Right.
The issue is prejudice from the deficient performance, and the dismissal of the appeal was not deficient. Therefore, the relief that...
Why wasn't there resulting prejudice when presumably the defendant's expectation was that the motion for a new trial, which would be presented in lieu of prosecuting the appeal, would be one where he would be represented competently by a lawyer, you know, who would brief and argue all of the issues that pertain to the motion for new trial?
What the Superior Court found, and I would suggest that the Superior Court did not abuse its discretion, was that there was no prejudice as a result of the failure to file a motion for a new trial because it would not have been granted.
Well, okay. The problem is, or at least the response to that argument is, well, that's good and well, and might be a complete answer had the had there been representation. That is, if the merits of the motion for new trial could have been determined originally based on the defendant being competently represented by counsel, but it wasn't, and so there's at least the possibility that the record was insufficient since it was a pro se motion.
It was a pro se motion, Your Honor, but one of the arguments that was raised in the Rule 61 motion was that the defendant was prejudiced by the perjured testimony of William Chen, which is the basis that was to be raised in the motion for a new trial.
Well, I mean, looking at Mr. Gabay's affidavit, he still asserts that he thought a new trial motion would have merit, and I haven't found in the record a list of any or all of the issues he would have raised in a motion for a new trial. So it's one thing to say Mr. Liu's pro se motion would be denied, but it's another thing to say that a new trial motion filed by an attorney who represented him at trial and who had already identified issues in his own mind that he thought would be meritorious would be denied. What's the record basis for saying that a properly filed new trial motion by an attorney would have been denied when we don't even know what would have been in the motion?
We know that the motion would have been based on the perjured testimony of William Chen. Your Honor is correct. We don't have a motion to look at nor any listing from Mr. Gabay now about what that motion would have contained. However, when the court examined the evidence against Mr. Liu at trial, and the fact that the perjured testimony actually came out during his trial, the jury was aware of Mr. Chen's perjured testimony.
Well, that's one issue. But if you look at our Rule 26, by way of analogy, where the attorney says, I don't see any issues on appeal, I move to withdraw, and then the defendant has an opportunity to supplement that and has none. Rule 26 requires this court to say, we've independently looked at the record, and we've concluded there are no arguable issues to raise on appeal, and then we can grant the motion. Now, in some cases, we identify issues and we grant the motion and we appoint counsel. In this particular case, there's no doubt the Superior Court thought about one issue, but do we have any indication that the Superior Court independently looked at the entire record, all possible issues that could be raised in a new trial motion, and concluded there were none?
I don't know that in his decision he states whether he reviewed the entire record of the transcript. However, his decision is based on the evidence. He says there is both quantity and quality of evidence that supports the conviction of Mr. Liu, and that the perjured testimony issue that resulted in a new trial for Ms. Chow was not present for Mr. Liu because...
I agree. But just to take an example that the court struggled with in its opinion, you can have evidence that supports a conviction, overwhelming evidence that supports a conviction. One of the sub-issues in this case is whether an FBI agent sat on the jury who shouldn't have been on the jury. And I know the Superior Court tried to ascertain that. They couldn't sort out the records. But I say that by way of example of a problem that could occur that would be independent of overwhelming evidence. So that's why I'm suggesting we need a record to conclude that no issue could have been validly raised in a motion for a new trial other than sufficiency of the evidence.
Correct, Your Honor. I can understand the need to have a record to decide the motion, whether a motion for a new trial would have been granted. Based on the record that the Superior Court had before it, it decided that such a motion would not be granted and that therefore there was not prejudice from trial counsel's failure to file that once the case went back to Superior Court.
Let's assume hypothetically that this court decides that there is prejudice because of the failure to follow through. And that suggests one of two remedies. One, remand so that the, and this would be along the comparable lines where a appellate deadline of 30 days is met. Remand to redate the original denial of the motion for post-conviction relief so that a properly, timely perfected appeal can be filed. That's option A. Option B is to remand for consideration of the motion for new trial with counsel representing, with counsel to file a motion for new trial. And that gets decided by the court under a benefit of the bargain type of approach. Which of those is the better option, assuming we find prejudice?
If the prejudice results from the failure to file the new trial motion, the state would suggest that the better option would be to allow the new trial motion to be heard rather than to hear the appeal. The appeal right was voluntarily given up, and the Superior Court found that there was no deficient performance in giving up that right or in the advice to give up that right because there were no meritorious issues on appeal.
The questions that Justice Holland and Justice Ridgely asked really present a big picture question, at least to me, and that is, you know, in these circumstances, how should the law have worked? Justice Ridgely alluded to two options, which of course are present. The third, neither of those options was the one that was selected by the court. There was a third, and that is the court tried to adjudicate after the fact, possibly without, clearly without the benefit of counsel representation and possibly without an adequate record, the merits of this hypothetical new trial motion. The question is, in these circumstances where counsel drops the ball, doesn't file a new trial motion, client attempts to carry the ball on a pro se basis, the matter somehow gets lost in the system for years, and finally, at some point, it becomes clear what happened. Should the trial court be allowed to do an ex post
adjudication of the merits of a hypothetical new trial motion, or should it have been required, or should it be required, to employ one or the other of the remaining options that Justice Ridgely articulated?
If I could start with a premise underlying all of this, is that a defendant does not have a right to counsel for a new trial motion. So to a certain extent, the whole, is it prejudicial, is there deficient performance, there's no right constitutionally.
In this case, let's assume that there was a right because it was bargained for in this particular case. That is, there was a right to an appeal, which was the subject of an absolute right, statutory right, was given up in exchange for a motion to the prosecution of a motion for a new trial.
Respectfully, Your Honor, there is no constitutional right to that appeal from the post-conviction motion. Yes, you're correct, there is a statutory right. So to the extent the hypothetical is that assume there's a right to counsel, then I think it is still correct when defendant has a counsel on that post-conviction motion for the court to be able to address the merits of whether there was whether a new trial motion would have been granted. The defendant had counsel in this Rule 61 proceeding.
Understood, but doesn't that presuppose that new counsel that's finally before the court will have taken every step possible that could have been taken to develop the record that should have been developed and make the arguments that should have been made years before? That is, at the time that the new trial motion should have been filed and prosecuted, but wasn't.
Yes.
And do we know whether that was done here?
Counsel for defendant did raise the issue of the effect of William Chen's perjured testimony on the trial and asserted that he did not receive a fair trial as a result of that. That's the flip side of a motion for a new trial. It's the same issue. It's just in a different procedural posture.
But so do we know that's the only issue that would have been raised by the motion for new trial?
I believe in Mr. Gabay's affidavit that's the only issue that he raises, and I believe the defendant's reply attached a letter from Mr. Gabay that also referenced that it was the perjury of William Chen that was going to be raised in the new trial motion. Other than that, I don't believe there's anything in the record to reflect that any other issues were going to be raised by Mr. Gabay.
Now, the other side says that they didn't really argue the motion for new trial. That was sort of appended to the disposition by the trial judge or the superior court judge. Is that accurate?
The issue was raised. I can't say whether Mr. Haley wishes he had raised it in a more thorough manner at this point, but the issue was presented to the court for consideration and decision. I don't think the state would be asserting at this point that Mr. Haley's representation of Mr. Liu has been ineffective.
I think that the state is here to defend what the trial judge did.
Correct.
And what the trial judge did, as we know, was to retroactively, those are my words, not yours, determine the merits of a motion that was never presented by counsel. Correct?
Correct, and I think that's the only...
And if, unless you can prevail on that point, the state loses, correct?
Correct, because there would be a finding of deficient performance.
If the lower court wasn't committed error by doing an ex post adjudication, then we would have to reverse.
Correct, but I believe the Superior Court had the ability and needed to...
I understand that. Now, the question is why? And you made one statement in response to questions asked by the other members of the panel, which seemed to be, well, because the defendant had counsel this time around, then that somehow, you know, that fact empowered the court to do an ex post adjudication. Is that the rule that you're arguing for?
The fact that the court had to do was performing a Strickland analysis and was trying to determine whether there was prejudice as a result of the failure.
I understand that. And you're saying there was no prejudice because counsel at long last did represent the defendant years later, but did represent the defendant in that circumstance. Permits the court, or permitted the court, to do an ex post adjudication as distinguished from remanding for a appointment of new counsel and a new look at the motion for a new trial, or simply resentencing in order to make it possible to have a timely appeal. Correct?
Well, Your Honor, I don't think resentencing would be appropriate. I think to vacate and reissue the post-conviction order. But yes, our position is that the Superior Court had the...
Okay, but again, does that make sense? Or, I mean, would that rule make sense unless it could be established, or would it make sense only if it could be established that the record that was developed by present counsel was the same record, and the arguments being made by present counsel are the same arguments that would have been made in the past in connection with the hypothetical, the motion for new trial?
I don't know that it could ever be determined by any court what that hypothetical motion would have had. All that can be presented, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Finish your answer.
All that could be presented at this point is the best arguments that counsel has.
And Mr. Gabe was the attorney for on the post-conviction motion, but he was not the trial attorney, is that correct?
No, Your Honor. The first post-conviction motion was a pro se motion. Mr. Gabe was trial counsel. And the way it worked out from a historical perspective is that the same day the first post-conviction motion was denied, Vicki Chow was granted a new trial. At that point, then Mr. Gabe, after the defendant had filed his pro se notice of appeal, entered his appearance, moved to remand the case back to the Superior Court to file a new trial motion, and that motion was denied. And then there were the discussions and some motions filed that ultimately led to the voluntary dismissal of the appeal.
So if Mr. Gabe was doing the Rule 61 motion, he wouldn't have been arguing his own ineffectiveness.
If he had represented on him on the... I don't know.
Who was the trial counsel?
Trial counsel was Mr. Gabe. And then the first post-conviction was pro se.
Mr. Gabe was the attorney that negotiated the arrangement involving the dismissal of the appeal in lieu of prosecuting a motion for a new trial.
That is correct, Your Honor.
So he had a self-interest in at least avoiding review of his own conduct by that dismissal.
I think if the court were to examine the record of the 1995 case, I think it is clear that Mr. Liu himself also moved to voluntarily dismiss the appeal. It's just at that point in time, Mr. Gabe was counsel of record because he had entered to file the motion for remand, and then he had moved to withdraw because of that issue. But it became clear that Mr. Liu himself wanted to proceed with the new trial motion instead of the direct appeal. So I don't think the conflict that would have obviously been there if Mr. Gabe had continued representing him on the appeal of the decision that was reviewing his effectiveness, that would have been a conflict. But it did not work out that way because Mr. Gabe, Mr. Liu wished to dismiss the appeal.
Thank you.
Your Honor, not much more to say from Mr. Liu's perspective beyond picking up on Justice Holland's point about, or Justice Risley's point about which remedy seems to fit the default here, the prejudice to Mr. Liu, and that is that the...
Mr. Haley, I'm having trouble hearing
you. I'm sorry.
Can you speak louder and slower?
Yes, Your Honor, I apologize. The prejudice that should be addressed here by the court is the uncounseled motion for new trial that Mr. Liu got in Superior Court instead of a counseled motion for a new trial and developed with the record. And he's particularly vulnerable, as the court notes from his prior decisions, being Chinese immigrant, and
so
his language difficulties
with
are...
So state that of the two options I presented, assuming we find prejudice...
Yes, Your Honor.
...that remand for consideration of the motion for... of a motion for new trial filed by counsel is the remedy?
It is, Your Honor, and again, in Superior Court most recently, while I was Mr. Liu's counsel, we briefed and argued the Rule 61 motion, and the motion for a new trial was a pro se thing that was sort of hanging on the docket that was not addressed to counsel's attention, and the court, I would submit, sort of swept it up in its decision to complete the docket and get finality in that court, but it was not, there was no record developed for the court, there was no transcripts developed of the trial for the court below, and His Honor did some investigation on his own apparently, but that was not through any records submitted by counsel to the court.
Thank you. Thank you both for your arguments. The court will take this matter under advisement. We'll also take a brief recess.